Today's show is brought to you by HelloFresh. Visit HelloFresh.com and use promo code BALDMOVE30 to save $30 off your first week of deliveries.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Bald Move TV, the officially unofficial podcast for all of television.
Yeah, which consists of exactly two shows this time.
maybe more. I've seen at least two that I want to talk about.
Okay.
And I know you've seen at least one. Let's get into it. The Deuce wrapped up last week.
Sure did.
Its first season's run. Going into this, I was expecting a expose, or like not an expose but an explanation of how like the porn industry rose to power. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I got that and a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I wasn't expecting a lot. Like, I mean, that's the first thing when I heard, like, man, that's weird for Simon and Pelicanos to take on porn. It's like, so as not, doesn't seem like it has anything to do with urban blight, but it has a lot to do with urban blight.
Yeah, as it turns out, it has a lot to do with organized crime and political maneuverings,
government
and
corruption
from top to bottom. Yeah, it's all about the. It's well within Simon's wheelhouse. Let's say that
it's his wheelhouse. And that, here's the thing, I don't know how you felt about it because we haven't talked about this since the last time. Mm-hmm. You must have liked it pretty okay because you kept up with the series without me having to like ride you about it. But I can't tell whether I'm just in the tank for Simon and Pelicanos or if this is genuinely in the top three things that I've seen this year. Because right now, I'm at Leftovers, Stranger Things, and The Deuce in my top three, I think. Mm-hmm. I think. The year's not over. We're still you know, true. Walking Dead.
Walking Dead's still on the air.
Walking
Mr.
Dead's
Robot.
Got some weeks to make some noise. Mr. Robot still got is actually super entertaining this year. What am I crazy or what do you think?
It's man, the form of storytelling that Simon employs in his work, and I guess Pelicanos as well, is not conducive to saying this is the favorite thing of mine that I saw this year. It's a really, really good show, but it's not about like the big moments or the big characters or anything like that. And it's not setting out to entertain you. It's simply dipping you into a scenario and just letting you get covered in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool. But for me, it's not conducive to saying, oh, yeah, top three. It's more like this is a thing that I really, really enjoyed this year, but it doesn't have those standout moments, those standout features that put other shows into my top three.
Well, so you're talking about like from a visceral thrills department?
Because the performance is like, it's almost like all of the performances are so good that there's nobody who stands out.
I kind of agree with that because like when I watch some of these episodes, I'm like, holy shit, this is such a quality production from top or bottom that like nothing does feel like it achieves escape velocity or. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a couple things that stand out. I thought that the scene between Red Man, or is it Method Man? I get my men. But
one of those guys.
He's playing a pimp, and he's talking to Candy and trying to make another, like, you know, she's one of the few independent sex workers working the Deuce.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a section, like, the Deuce is a section of New York City.
Yeah.
Or a particular strip. Is it Second Street?
Maybe.
Like, I feel like I want to go back and I've been promising Cecily that I'll go back and rewatch this, and I thought we'd get around to it but we've got so much stuff to watch. But I feel like, they established that in the pilot, and I got completely the wrong impression.
I did, too. I thought it was a person.
I guess it's, according to Wikipedia, it's the nickname for 42nd Street between 7th Avenue and 8th Avenue.
Okay.
The Deuce?
Sure.
42nd Street, wouldn't it be the Quattro Deuce? Maybe it used to be the Quattro
Deuce.
It's the Deuce with an apostrophe. That's not a cherry, it's an apostrophe.
Right.
On the logo. But no, that scene with her, like, I thought that was like a particularly like sit up and take notice scene.
Yeah, I think if you're going to say anybody stands out, it's Maggie Gyllenhaal. Mm-hmm. Gyllenhaal, however you want to say it. Because she has the two most memorable scenes in my mind. The one of which I think so I watched two more episodes. It's either in the finale or the penultimate episode. That scene with her brother is incredible, I thought.
Jake
from State Farm?
No, Jake.
Oh, no, fuck. No, not that brother, the fictional TV brother.
Right.
That's just a fantastic scene, and her performance in it is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that dude whose name I don't know. That was definitely a standout moment to me.
Yeah, there's... I guess here is my takeaway, or this is why I think The Deuce is so good, because it's yet another one of the statements that Simon is making about the real problem is corruption, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what artificial structures do we put on society that enable corruption to occur?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like one of his big theses is by having this puritanical views on sin things.
Yeah.
Whether that's sex work, whether that's drugs, whether that's gambling, it allows this, like this, it's kind of like it's the same thing you get from The Godfather. Like, a lot of people don't see anything intrinsically wrong with it. They're saying it's something that's naughty and something you don't do, and it's something you don't do in polite society, which allows it to be tolerated because people see it's like, oh, you know, who are you really hurting except for maybe yourself?
Mm-hmm.
So like you get it's easy to look the other way, and because it is this black or gray market, there's this fantastic amount of money to be made, which then you put into the right hands of people. And then the corruption just runs rampant. Like, I just recently rewatched The Wire, and it's stunning in season one how at the end, when they're about ready to pull the trigger on the Barksdale gang,
yeah,
the FBI gets involved, and they're like, fuck Barksdale. We want all these Baltimore fucks that are stealing money and they're misappropriating finances. And the street level detectives are fucking furious,
mm-hmm.
because they busted their ass, and you don't want to take this killer off the street. You want to get, and I guess what the FBI realizes, or like if you're at a higher level of the game, is like, this is the part of the game that makes the game continue. Like if you cut the head off Barksdale, there'll be another one, because the people at the top that are profiting from this system are still in power.
Yeah, they're encouraging it.
And I felt like distinctly the same thing when I'm watching this, that, you know, there's this, but there's also like Simon tells you why people don't like this, because, like, you know, the drug trade is pretty fucking grim, and the sex trade is really fucking grim.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you can see the effects that are in play because it's a black market, right? And that's the thing that you see really moving away from. Like, it's very much a Hamsterdam situation from The Wire. Where
yes, thank you.
The judges stop cracking down on it, right? And they essentially say it's legal now,
right?
Even though they're technically it's not,
right?
But they're not cracking down anymore. So now the pimps are feeling themselves pushed out of the game because everything's going inside. The cops are pushing it all indoors. The prostitutes don't need them anymore,
right? And the thing, the ironic thing is, everyone talks about how bad sex work is, but what makes it bad, it seems like it's the pimps and the johns.
Right. It's the treatment and the underground nature of it.
And that was just like in The Wire, like, you know, several times where characters like, I don't understand why this business can't be run like any others. Like, every other place, people's stuff is bought and sold and no one dies over it. Well, the reason that is because it's illegal.
Yeah.
Same thing here. The reason these women need these brutal pimps is because the Johns will victimize them otherwise. The reason they need that is because they can't go to some establishment with a fucking bouncer that would keep things safe and orderly, because it's illegal.
Yeah.
It's this fucking snake eating its own tail. And at any point, you can look at it and be like, my God, look how bad this is. Thank God it's illegal and we can fight it.
Right.
Whereas if people just like make peace with the idea that some people are going to want to pay for sex,
mm-hmm.
and people are going to want to sell it because it's got a lot of money, and the same way with drugs or anything, it's like, why did this thing I keep watching anytime when I see something in Vice is like this country learned its lesson and in a fucking hurry when it came to alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Why the fuck are we so slow to learn about drugs, especially, and prostitution? Are we so against prostitution because it's the one? I'm gonna put my social justice warrior hat on. Are we so up in arms about legal prostitution because it's the one area in life, prostitution and porn work, where the pay gap cuts the other way?
Probably, yeah.
I mean, that's not the reason, right?
Certainly, yeah. I don't think you're wrong about that. I think it also disproportionately, like alcohol, disproportionately affects, or I should say, like. Prostitution and drugs disproportionately affect people who are not in power, I think. Mm. And when you take away the alcohol from the people who are in power, they go, it's not such a good idea.
Right. I see what you're saying.
I feel like taking away their toys is no fun for them. Taking away everyone else's toys doesn't really matter to them.
Right. And like, and the other thing is like with this, it's those weird, it's like the moral hazard is so slight. Like, ask any Wall Street guy how hard it is to get coke. I imagine they can get any time they want in whatever quantities they
that's
want.
True.
It doesn't affect their daylight. Now, once in a blue moon, one of them will get pulled over by the wrong cop who won't listen to their pleas. Do you know who I am? And there's all this money. And they'll get. But it's like getting struck by lightning. Like, what are you going to do, not go outside?
Right.
Same thing with Johns and prostitutes. Like, here it's like such a fucking joke, this like, what was it, stand and prove or whatever? Or,
oh, yeah, the arrest every night, like, and then
if you've
how
gotten,
often have you been arrested?
If you've gotten arrested within the last 48 hours, you can't get arrested again, or literally we do nothing but arrest prostitutes all night.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what?
Who is that helping?
No one.
Right.
No one. And I'm like, one of those things where it's like, just like the ripping and rolling that they talked with Herc and Carver doing, like, who making these street level busts of these people that you know are not, these are just kids holding drugs or holding money. They're not the people actually making money. What good is it doing? Well, we're getting arrested and we can show in our metrics that
the numbers look good.
We arrested 75 whores a night. What do you want from us?
And then they get more overtime, right? Because it looks like, oh, prostitution is going up, more arrests.
And how, like, they don't, like, I also loved how they did it, like the prostitution arrests go up at the end of a shift change because it's an easy way for you to flip an 8-hour shift into, you know, a 12-hour plus time for appearing before the judge and all that stuff. It's like so fucking cynical. and like everyone's getting paid. And there's this thing, like, they make this joke about how, like, the people owning these establishments are getting shaken down by every level of law enforcement.
Yeah.
The local guys come,
the
vice squad comes,
the feds,
the state come, the fed, they all want, and they're like all acting like, oh my God, you want, this is a bunch of money. But then you find out, like, I forget what Vincent's brother-in-law.
Whatever he is the union guy from season two of The Wire
or whatever. He is bitching nonstop about how much money he's paying out, but you find out that that's not even a fraction of what he makes a week on these joints. So, like, it's just this fucking bizarre system, and it all goes – none of this would be happening if it gets illegal. And also, what are the effects of this being legal? Like, what are you so worried that's going to happen in society of this shit being legal that you're not worried about when all the cops are on the dole?
Right.
And not even just the cops, the commissioner, the city council, the mayor, the governor. Mm-hmm. Like, how far up does this go? And do you really think that – 2017, like, are there, like, did we solve police corruption back in the 80s and 90s?
I don't think so, no.
Do you think that there are not cops being paid to look the other way nowadays?
Certainly there are.
I have this uncomfort because I have a very good friend, like, one of my very close friends is a police officer. And it's interesting to talk with this. It's like, you know, because you always hear about the bad apple philosophy. I think we talked about this in the first podcast, but, like, Why is this situation tolerated if there's not, like, a majority of a clear majority of police that are in on the take? Then why is it tolerated?
I think you got to watch The Shield to find that out.
Because, like, I mean, I understand, like, when it comes to brutality, because I've talked to my buddy and he's got, like, you know, well, no one, it's an ugly scene and no one wants to see an alleged perpetrator get victimized and beat up. But on the other hand, every cop has had bad days and every cop has seen a lot of shit. And the fact that, like, one of you snaps every once in a while is kind of seen as an occupational hazard. And, like, what if it's you? What if it's you that snaps because some asshole, you know, it's like, it's kind of like, if we arrested each other for every time someone's civil rights would be violated, there would be no cops on the street.
Right.
That I don't agree with, and I think it's a dangerous attitude, but I at least understand the whole, like, money exchanging hands and justice being bought and sold.
It just seems like greed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and then it makes me think, like, here's the thing. I don't want to think this about law enforcement, but it's an inescapable conclusion that they don't care about the law and justice so much as, like, it's just a fucking industry.
Yeah, it's a job.
There is no no respect. Like, and then, but then, you know, if you go on the subreddits, like, you know, serve and protect or whatever, like, they want to decry the fact that no one respects the law anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you see something like the Deuce, and, like, why the fuck would anyone respect an NYPD police officer of that era?
Sure, sure.
Like, but they're also the same guys that they're the heroes of 9/11. Like, it's not, it's almost like the cops themselves know that it's bullshit. Because, like, when there's a hostage situation, these brave men and women, like, fucking mount up and they regulate, right?
Yeah.
But then they're also getting money for the drugs and the sex trade and looking the other way. It's the fucking weirdest ecosystem.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what makes, I guess, the character of Alston so good. Or at least so compelling, because he's kind of caught in the middle of this. And he is the guy who sees it and goes, this doesn't work, and it's all a bad idea, but right. What am I going to do about it?
Right.
You know, I'm just one person. And now you got this new captain who comes in. I don't know what his name is, but...
Me either.
He seems like he's going to clean house, or at least try to, but who knows how far that's going to go.
Well, the finale, kind of, after his partner kind of blows the spot up for working with this journalist and maybe a little bit too close, I felt like the captain was awful buddy-buddy with the lieutenant or whoever's who's the main shitbag.
He was, yeah.
And I'm like,
and Alston, like, side eyes that, yeah.
Right? Like, oh my god, because that's like you. It's one that's weird. It's almost like you're wearing a wire for one side of the police against the other side of the police. And if you play that game wrong, then you're gonna be a god. You're gonna be a pariah
for sure.
Which has, like, you know, if you look at, like, what's that American Gangster story?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can have consequences. If you're the only guy not on the dole, and you need your brothers in blue behind you, and they're not, that can be dangerous. Sometimes intentionally so.
Definitely. I don't know. It's interesting. I also like this kind of dual nature of the brothers, right? The Martino brothers, both played by James Franco.
I'm think surprised it was, you didn't talk about James Franco's work, because, like, I thought
he's so good, but, like, That's what I mean when there's, like, this base level of awesome that Franco unfortunately doesn't rise above. Like, he's so good
and
in both of
thing,
those roles, but he just – everything else is too.
I think Ewan McGregor is going to get an Emmy nom for Fargo, and this guy's not, because, like, what he does by having this clear separation between Frankie and Vincent is so amazing, but it's so subtle that I feel like Ewan with the hairpiece and the nose is going to suck up all the oxygen, even though that's probably easier to do. You've got a bunch of props to work with.
Absolutely.
Like, other from the first episode where, like, Vincent had a Band-Aid on his eye, he had a wound.
Right.
Like you, the only way you have to distinguish them is their attitude and the way they hold themselves, and it's so easy to do that.
It is.
Once you get a couple episodes in.
Mm-hmm.
It's phenomenal. And also, the because here's the thing, like, I feel like I don't want to shit on cops because, again, they're not the problem. The problem is the people above them that are deciding what levers of society to pull and what's important and what's not, okay? And I feel like Vincent's a part of that, too, because he's a guy who he would never cut a woman.
No.
But he sees a pimp cutting a woman and it's like, well, that's kind of the deal they both made.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that he is, you know, not going to get into the sex stuff,
right?
Like his brother seems to be willing to,
right?
And it's interesting from the point of view of, like, who's making the money, I guess, and the legal versus illegal nature of it. In the illegal game, the prostitution stuff, there's a lot more money to be made,
right?
And we see that, you know, James Franco as Vincent is turning down all this, whereas Frankie's leaning into it and he's making a killing.
Yeah. It's going to go badly.
It's definitely going to go badly, yeah.
This is act one of Goodfellas.
Yeah, I mean, you can see that this guy who, let's not forget, started off in deep with the mob.
Yeah.
Like, in huge debt to them. And it was only by the good grace of Vincent that he got out of it.
Right.
I think Vincent is losing patience with Frankie because he's getting into this. And he's getting into it with a gangster.
Mm-hmm.
He's in big trouble. But I think it's interesting the juxtaposition of the two twins who have different demeanors getting into the illegal trade, one getting into the legal thing with the bars and the restaurants.
The other thing I was meditating is, like, you know, we got this big liberal and conservative divide in the country when it comes to, like, how we feel about morals and social issues. And, like, it's also portrayed as, like, an urban-rural divide.
Mm, yeah.
I felt like this show did an interesting statement where, like, people living in a city are not necessarily more liberal. It's just that in the country, what are the odds you're going to come across a gay person?
Yeah, an uncloseted gay person?
Yeah.
Very slim.
In New York City, it's like approaching one that you're going to work with someone or live next to someone or be in it. And like the inescapable conclusion you have if you're forced to cohabitate in the same space is like, oh, this is a human being.
Right. They're not evil people.
So I have to lose my fucking, like, I can say this is the one good homosexual in the world.
Right.
Or shit, I just met his boyfriend and he's cool too.
Uh-huh.
Whereas you can live your entire life cradle to grave and never have that experience in the country.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like, I don't. Like I feel like people spend a lot of time, like, doing social experiments about liberals are do this and conservatives do this, but it's more like lived experience.
Yeah.
And I don't, like, the depressing thing about that, it's not like certain types of people, or it's just like experience, and how are you going to get people the experiences they need to engage their empathy engines?
You take them to see Boys in the Sand.
I have not seen
the
that.
The latest reproduction of Lawrence of Arabia. I thought that scene was hilarious.
Oh,
just
shit!
Frankie's
oh, shit.
Disgust
yeah,
in the movie
yeah.
theater.
Right, right. But not fatally so. Like, I just
no,
watched
he just doesn't want to watch it. Like, that's not his thing, right?
Right, and that's fine.
Totally
that's
fine.
good point.
But all of his reactions to that were
everyone needs
priceless.
To sit down and watch gay porno and to see it. It's not that bad. completely derailed my thought here.
Sorry.
No, but I thought that was one of the other key findings that, you know, and also, like, the way that Vincent, like, I think one of the reasons he doesn't get involved with that is that he's got this, like, well, everybody makes their own choice. But mm-hmm. we see with some of these women. Like, the one that I thought, I can't remember her name. Is it Charlene? Who is the one that goes out into the back to the country? Abby.
Darlene.
Buys, Darlene. Yeah. Goes and recruits one of her friends, and she's, like, it's one thing to move to the big city because you think you're going to be a model or an actor, and it doesn't work out, and oh, shit, now I'm with this pimp.
Mm-hmm.
But she predatorily goes out and recruits, and almost you get the idea that she used Abby's ticket to do that because that's what her pimp set her up to do.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I don't know, man.
It's interesting because she also played the most perplexing character in Show Me a Hero, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's
for
one
sure.
of those things where it's like, I understand why you're in this situation, mm-hmm. but you are being given a way out, and you double down.
Yeah.
And that's something that, like, David Simon's trying to tell me that I'm not quite understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe it's the fact that, like, you know, I guess if I try to engage my empathy engines, you know, with my experience being in a cult, I could have left at any time. But at certain points, if you were making the life story of or the movie of my life story, there'd be a lot of points where the audience is like, Jesus Christ, why didn't you get off this crazy train?
Absolutely.
It's not that easy, maybe.
It's some of it, as odd as it probably sounds to say, is just comfort. Like, it's a very hard thing to change. And in some instances, it's harder to change than it is to get out of the situation where people are being murdered around you or your armpits are being cut open and you're being forced to have sex constantly. Like, there's a lot of friction there. And if you see, like, a potential way out, but it's not super obvious and you don't think it's going to work,
right,
taking that risk is a hard thing.
Yeah, it's interesting because the other thing that the Simon does so well is make something look so cool and glamorous and awesome, and then make you the next scene think about how terrible. And I felt like I kept on this roller coaster of like being really entertained by the pimping, and then being confronted with just how like amoral and predatory it is.
Yeah,
like there's some of the most colorful and interesting characters are. Surprise, surprise, the pimps. But, and I thought it was like the really jaw dropping thing is like another standout scene is when Slim Charles, the character he owns, the diner, he's fucking shot.
Oh, yeah.
Reggie B. Love in the face.
Yep.
Like, it was just like, he's like, this guy, and they built that up all season long. Like, this guy, like,
yeah.
You come in here and but I don't like the way you treat your women. Like baseline, and then when you like fucking rub it in your face, it's gonna. And he just fucking like, I'm gonna kill this dude. Pick up the phone, tell the cops, like, yeah, pimp is in here. Slap the customer, pulled out a knife, and I shot him dead. And it's gonna. It's like a victimless crime. And then the other pimps are like, it reminded me a lot of like in The Right Stuff, where like all the test pilots who are flying like these crazy unstable airplanes close to the envelopes. Anytime one of their ranks would die, they would have this powwow at the diner where it's like, well. Here's how this guy fucked up, and he should have done this, and it's a way to comfort themselves. Is like, I've got the right stuff. If I was in an airplane, I would have landed. Not that this is fucking insane, crazy, what we're all doing. Oh, my God. It's like, and the way they were breaking it down, like, oh, well, you know, of course he's, you know, he fucking had to open his mouth. Like, none of them are open to the idea that they're all walking this fucking tightrope.
Yeah.
I think it's, like I said, I think it's fascinating. I don't know,
man. It's... I don't know how deep to go on this because I'll be the first to admit I have not given this a lot of thought, but
perfect podcast.
I've lived somewhat of a charmed life, and we'll talk about that as it concerns the mobsters here in a second. But
all your pimps have been very understanding, and you had the hippie pimp.
I did, yeah.
I mean, that's the pimp to have.
Yeah, he didn't cut my armpits. But when this guy shoots the pimp, the diner guy shoots the pimp. There doesn't seem to be much fear of being arrested, and I can't tell if that is because the cops won't arrest him. He knows that that's true, or if because of, you know, who he is in America, he's just simply not afraid of it. Because I was thinking, like, what is once your entire race has been enslaved by someone, what scares you? What fucking scares you in your life, right? Like
probably going back, like or.
Sure, going back to slavery, but, like, does prison scare you? Hmm. Like, is that something that... I don't know. I just think,
let me ask you this. What if, like, a sizable proportion of your population has been locked up in prison because of various drug and other laws?
Right.
Now you're, like, as a way to cope with that, some of the culture glorifies it?
Oh, I don't know about that, but I don't think you can be scared. I don't think you can be intimidated by anything at that point. Like... What worse can you do to me?
Right. I think it's I don't know if there's I think as a motive it's just like I like it's these pimps time they never really had a time and it's kind of like the their time is over and he just realized that I can kill this guy with him. It's like a drug dealer. Like if you have a drug dealer that's got like carrying a gun, you as a law-abiding citizen can go up and shoot him in the face at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a fucking cop in the you're not gonna do time for murder. You're just not.
Huh.
The guy's gonna have a gun. The cops are gonna know that he's on the corner and he's got a gun. And like all you gotta do is like he acted really weird and he pulled the gun and I had to shoot him.
Okay.
Like shit, you can kill a teenager in a hoodie in this country and not get charged for murder, much less a drug. Like it's like you put yourself outside the law and you make yourself essentially an easy mark for anyone that's inside the law. And that's like. The Wire explored that with like how easily these powerful drug dealers were taken advantage of by legitimate businessmen and developers.
Mm, right.
And like I think this is like where these pimps think themselves as like the apex predators out there, but the civilian guy just gets tired of your shit and shoots you.
Yeah.
And nothing. He's going to be serving pancakes the very next day.
Yeah, it's so weird to me the attitude of the mobster guy. I don't know his name. But the head guy who's kind of befriended Vincent.
Yeah.
he seems to have this very carefree attitude about everything. Like, they're trying to arrange the second...
Rudy.
Okay, yeah. They're trying to arrange the second parlor, and Vincent tells him to go fuck himself, respectfully, as respectfully as possible, go fuck yourself. Uh-huh. And he's like, guy just told me to go fuck myself. Eh, he'll come around.
I think the respect...
Like,
yeah.
This is, like, the most charmed life you can have, I think.
Yeah, I kept on waiting for that to turn... You know, Act Three of Goodfellas, and I think like
it's not going to happen in this season.
The respectfully
obviously,
went a long way, but also I think the guy knows. Like the money's too good. Money's too good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the same impulse that got him into the bar, that got him into the first jerk joint, is going to get him into like, and he's just supremely confident because, you know, like why go to the pistol when you just give a man another thousand and.
And it's a guy who's already making you money, you know?
Right. I mean, he's a... And that's the other thing. It's like, I wonder, like, maybe Vincent will be the guy that navigates this. Because, like, at some level, the mob's got to know that, like, having a solid guy is pretty good.
And he knows that. Yeah.
He says that. It's out. It's this weird performance. Like, it's outside of, the fucking Sith Lord Apprentice bubble where the guy's underneath you trying to fuck you. And, you know, this guy that just fucking performs and executes. Like, that's got to be... That's got to have a lot of value to it.
Yeah, and the question becomes, how far do you push him?
Well,
like,
and then...
Can you push him too far?
Right. And then also, can Frankie, like, the more responsible and power he gets, like, the bigger his fuck-up can be.
Right.
And if he fucked up so much that he almost got you and him killed, like, just with a gamble, what's he going to do when he, like, you know, owns these massage parlors?
And I think his brother-in-law is living pretty dangerously here,
yes,
too.
Yes, he
getting
is.
Involved with the prostitutes, you know?
Yes, he is. And, like, the more they get in-depth and into the mob, the hardest going to be to like to keep saying no and fuck you.
And Frankie and that dude whose name I don't know are not going to be extended the same graces that Vince would, because Vince has shown that he's a solid guy across the board. He's still making money in other ways. Those guys need to watch their back,
right?
But they're getting sloppy already.
Bobby Vincent, Frankie's brother-in-law,
right?
I also thought it was really cool the angle they took with the reporter, where she's working for like a black owned and operated newspaper, and like her own editor tried to put the kibosh on a story because it didn't shine a positive light on the community.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a problem with a lot of things in a nutshell. Like, nobody wants to tell the truth when the truth... Like, I see that in politics and society. No one wants to tell the full... Everyone wants to tell the full truth when you're talking about the flaws of the other side of a political or cultural or racial design. But nobody wants to tell the truth when it comes to the uncomfortable realities. Like if it's... The truth is the truth, and you can explain. You can say, like, it's because of this, because of that. But, like... I don't know. Like, it seems like that's the type of shit the mainstream, the non-black newspapers are not going to tell the story because they're bought and sold by the local politicians, probably, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
So someone's got to tell, but they're not going to because, like, I don't want a story that makes it look like every African-American in New York City is, like, a pimp or a hoe.
Yeah. I really feel like it's the organized crime that's pulling all the strings here. Politicians, cops, you know, they've got their fingers in everything in ways that are kind of calling the shots.
Right.
Which to the point where it surprised me when they didn't know why the judges were not cracking down anymore on the prostitution stuff.
Right.
Or relaxing the standards on public decency, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I assume that they had paid for that privilege, but they apparently did not.
Also, there's some other low-key commentary, like Big Mike, the guy who comes up with the ideas for the masturbatoriums.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to see a dime of that money. Or he might see a dime. He might see a dime for every $1,000 that are made.
Like, that's, yeah, yeah.
That's the kind of thing that should make you a fucking McDonald's fortune.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to get paid like the guy who invented the chicken nugget.
Yeah.
This is which that's also a metaphor that came from The Wire. I thought that's like, and I thought that they're going to make a point, like Big Mike is going to get like, see how much money is being made. And he's going to be like, this is fucking bullshit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know. Like my reward is to see a Looney Tune in my own masturbatorium. Fuck you, man. Yeah. Like, I wonder if that's because
he
like,
might, that could still be coming.
Yeah. Because I feel like that, Big Mike and his I don't know who the gunman is, but like that's,
I think it's Black Frankie.
Is it Black? Frankie? Oh, that's right. It's Frankie.
I think so, yeah,
but
yeah.
But it's Black Frankie. He's like, is like, so we can call you Black. Is that cool? I was like, yeah, whatever.
Right.
What are you going to do if I say no? Probably call me Black Frankie anyway. I thought that was kind of interesting how that, like, Vincent has his whole army is made from the people. His army and his network of confidants are made from the people that would not be part of the mafia. Mm, like, he's got an educated and upper middle class, at least, student, ex-student, Abby.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the, you got Big Black Mike. Yeah, Black Mike and Black Frankie. You got Big Mike and Black Frankie. Mm-hmm. You've got the gay bartender whose name escapes me at this point.
Yep.
You've got all these, like, kind of like non-conventional power players in New York becoming power players.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be the tale of the pornography? The fact that like, it seems like the mob is going to already got their fingers in that pie.
They do. Yeah.
Like, it's like, is that going to be the tale of the, like an industry that gets out from, nope, it seems like, no, it's going to be.
Well, the one avenue that they don't have yet is what Candy's getting into, right? Which is the movies, like making of the actual films.
Right.
It seems like, that's totally independent at this point.
You know, and that's, you know, because I came of age in the beginning of the, like, the, well, I mean, at the beginning, but when gonzo porn was ascendant, like just straight fucking no plot, rent out a hotel room, bad lighting, bad camera work, just two people fucking.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like that's where porn started on these 8mm films, just fucking people fuck, watching people fuck.
Uh-huh.
Then Candy, or Eileen, I suppose is what we should call her, gets in there and like gets to like what is sexy about it.
Yeah.
And like starts to make this porn that's sexy because it's got a woman's point of view. And it's undeniably like that's the other thing that surprised me is like going in, the rep was there's going to be lots of sex and nudity, but none of it's going to be sexy.
Mm-hmm.
I actually found some of the stuff was sexy, but it was always the one that the consensual sex, like when Vincent and Abby would get it on, like I'm thinking specifically the pool table scene. I thought that was pretty hot. None of this stuff, like between that, was like on camera or like actual sex was sexy at all.
No,
but it feels like so that then the high class like Boogie Nights era of porn became ascendant.
Yeah,
but now we're back with shitty. Like it's high def and make good lighting, but like I mean, maybe I'm just getting old, but like I feel like porn today sucks.
It's cyclical.
It's not sexy at all.
Yeah, it's gonna be. There's gonna be you know, ebbs and flows.
Can we get gonzo porn that's actually shot in a sex? Like I don't want to bring back. I don't want to bring back, you know,
the storylines. Okay. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
The Pirates of the Booty Rean. Like I don't need to see. I don't need to see Star Wars. I don't need to see any of that shit. But just people fucking that it actually looks good. That I could use. That looks like there's some passion. Maybe you can't pay for it. That's the problem.
I guess she actually makes Deep Throat. The film?
No, Deep Throat premiered during the season.
I thought...
Because they're saying that was one they're like, they're just actually showing that, like, in the real movie. Like, because that was
I thought it was a premiere of the film that she had made.
Where?
Am I wrong
about
that?
No, there was multiple, but they were making allusions to Deep Throat as being, as what was remarkable about that, is premiering at movies that are not even stroke theaters.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Which that's the prostitute culture where it's like, oh, it's rainy tonight, so I'm going to go into the theaters and see if I can get $10 for a head.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a job.
And how like open? That's the other thing that kind of shocked me from a guy who grew up in the I'm a country boy from the Midwest. Like, I don't know if there's still places in New York like this, but like if you wanted to get your dick sucked or suck dick, seems like it's the easiest thing in the world to find.
Yeah, just go to the Deuce.
Just go to the Deuce and
start knocking on random warehouse doors.
Right. Until you find a way in. I don't know.
Yeah,
that was surprising to me. Huh. So, you know, that's the other thing. It's like, everyone says the drugs are everywhere, but I don't know where to find them.
No, I don't either.
I mean, I suppose I could go to, like, my local Applebee's and ask the bartender where you can score, but
yep.
It's like, it's not immediately obvious to me where the drugs are being sold.
It's on college campuses and, yeah. And that's, in, I mean, bars downtown.
I guess that's not true, because I know where place. I bet I could drive to places and find where it's. I just don't usually see it in day-to-day life. Anyway, what else we want to talk about?
I don't know. I wish I could talk about it in other terms, because I feel like I'm selling it short when I say everything is so good that nothing stands out.
Right.
But that's just the truth of it, and I think this kind of storytelling lends itself. Like, you put really good actors in a time and place, and you just tell us the story of that. You don't You don't really construct this crazy, like, awesome narrative. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's how I feel about David Simon's stuff. I know he is crafting it, obviously.
Right.
But it feels more like I'm just being dropped into a time and place, and I'm there.
Right. Which is the charm of it.
Yeah.
The other thing, I'm always fascinated by the stories of the women when I watch these. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm rooting for every one of them to get out, and I know that probably not a huge majority of them are.
No. They pass out are few and difficult.
Right. And but on the other hand, I guess the glimmer of hope is, if this is the story of kind of like the end of pimping, but it's not. They're still fucking pimps.
I suppose so.
It's I wonder if we're seeing like a temporarily downturn for these guys, but it's going to, like, the laws are going to change and they're going to be back, or there'll be a new generation of them. Or,
yeah.
I don't know, but like I feel like, you know, the reason we have pimps is because prostitution is illegal.
Sure.
And if prostitution were legal, and they had respectable, you might not agree with them, but respectable, well-run establishments, you don't need pimps. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to have, you know, violent Johns mistreating the women.
Right.
That seems like a good thing.
Sure, to me. Yeah.
Like, honestly, I don't, like, you know, I that's the thing. Like, I can get in that mindset of, like, but I never really even understood it, even when I was very religious. I never understood, like, why is it my job to make the world reflect heavenly values? Like, isn't that the whole deal? Like, we are tempted and we,
right.
And, like, you know, we make use of our faith and our salvation to, like, overcome that. Like, why would I want to make, like, vice illegal?
Yeah, if I'm living by, you know, that sort of ethos where I have to prove myself during this life worthy of some kind of heavenly reward.
Right.
If there's no temptation on the planet, like, let's say I succeed in the goal of eliminating prostitution, eliminating drugs, eliminating all the things I view as evil and sinful.
Right.
Then there is no temptation.
Right.
And wouldn't that mean I could not fulfill whatever heavenly destiny I would have?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's several parables of Jesus that speak right to that, about, like, you know, woe to those who have life good now because they're going to fall in temptation and be fucked in paradise, whereas you are going to, you know, inherit the kingdom. Like, I don't get it. And it's weird because, like, why stop at vice? Mm-hmm. Because, like, it seems like a short skip and a jump to outlawing any religion that's not your own. Because, my God, what if the... And then it's like that suddenly starts making a lot of sense. Like, if you start, like, okay, well, we're going to make abortion illegal and drugs illegal and alcohol illegal and gambling illegal and prostitution illegal because we don't want people to be tempted, then why the fuck wouldn't you make...
And I think a lot of people
make Judaism and Muslim and Hindu and Shinto and all the other religions illegal? Because, like, that can that tempts the shit out of people.
Right.
Tempts 6/7 of the world's population into hell and damnation.
Yeah. I think that is a lot of people's mindset.
Well, I mean, you see it clearly.
Legislate Christianity. Whatever religion you are.
Right. Like, you see that tension between, like, you know, what it seems like the ideals of the country of religious freedom and then, well, you know, our religion is going to inform the laws we pass. Like, well, you really blur those lines, man.
Yeah, I guess I never quite understand the need or the desire, I guess, for control over other people.
I mean, I get...
If you're enjoying living your life, why do you care if I enjoy living mine?
It's always because, like, the reason, the whole reason alcohol got The whole reason Prohibition came about is because, like, the League of Women are like, you know what? You know what gets a lot of women's ass beat and children without fathers and, like, you know, in the poorhouse is because their men drink.
Yeah.
So let's make the drinking illegal because the worst of that excess is terrible. And it always is.
Sure.
Like, you want to know why heroin's illegal? Go fuck into a shooting gallery and look at how devastated these people are.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the disconnect is making it illegal doesn't make it stop. It just makes all the bad things around it worse.
Yeah.
You add on all these like leech systems that make the things worse and make it insanely profitable. So, but I don't know. Like The Wire didn't change anybody's mind. Show Me Here didn't change anybody's mind. Is The Deuce going to change anybody's like, or are we going to get like legal prostitution?
I don't know. Is that fair to say? We've had a lot of states legalize.
That's true. I mean, it changed. Like I said, watching The Wire changed my politics.
Yeah.
In a big way.
I don't know that it had like a major effect. I'm almost certain it didn't have zero effect.
Yeah.
Because within those last 5 years, since it's been off the air or whatever, things have changed a little bit.
Things have changed.
They're moving in a direction.
Things. Like, you know, like it seems like the nation's at a tipping point when it comes to marijuana. But like to me, that's the lowest of the hanging fruit.
Sure. Absolutely. But, you know, the journey is going to take a while.
Do you think that, like, the fact that we're in this middle of this heroin and opioid, like, we're in the middle of this crisis, and it really mm-hmm. is. Like, there's communities, like, fucking in Indiana and Ohio and the Midwest and South that are just, like, being gutted, and it's, like, spiking HIV rates through the roof, and it's just terrible. Like, and it's depressing because we just did, like, you know, we just had local elections, and I went on the sites, and I was reading, like, you know, I'm trying to choose candidates that, like, are less prohibition and more about education and training and
prevention,
like, and prevention and safety net so people don't fall into these situations. And I swear to God, like, you take a Republican and a Democrat city council, and most of them are virtually indistinguishable about what they think we should do about this opioid crisis.
Hmm.
Every once in a while, I'd find one that like says the things that Aaron wants to hear a politician say, like essentially, let's try something new.
Right.
Let's try something new. We've done this for 40 fucking years and we just play whack-a-mole with the drug of choice.
Yeah.
Like, you know, last year it was meth. The year before that was crack. Now it's fucking heroin. Let's just let's try to do something different. And they fucking, I guess that's where I don't have any hope because no side gives me a way out of this.
Those are the two, like, biggest shocking moments in The Wire, or, like, conceptual things in The Wire and The Deuce, where in The Wire you have Hamsterdam, which is a new way of thinking, is changing the equation. In the Deuce, you have the judges just loosening the laws on indecency. You
know? Because they got slipped a couple greenbacks.
Right. You have to look at that and say, okay, this is where the change is happening for the better. What is causing it and what is motivating it?
Also, you know? The other thing is, like, if I get really cynical, like, not in a conspiracy sense, but just like this is the way the world works, I feel like sometimes they like having these whipping boys around. Like, the politician likes having drug problems because that's something they can sign 500 new police officers. They can pass new laws. They can fucking fill up prisons and say, look at what we're doing. Whereas, like, figuring out how to make jobs on the eve of everything being automated is fucking hard.
Yeah.
Like, training entire new sectors of the economy to deal with stuff, like providing quality, that shit's hard. But getting people whipped up about what bathrooms transgenders use or cracking drug dealers, like, that shit is popular and it's like knee jerk, easy, and like it's something you can execute on
for sure.
And like, but that's like, so there's no one is incentivized to like do anything different about it.
Well, that's why I mentioned like the game changers, like, where do those come from? If everyone at the top is corrupt and everyone is looking how they can score or looking how they can leverage people against each other, where does that change come from and why does it happen?
Right. I don't know.
Because that's certainly something that did happen in our real world when we're talking about, you know, The Deuce. Those indecency laws got relaxed and why?
Right. Yeah, it's like,
was it truly just the public decided this is not something that we're interested in anymore and the judges followed, or was there some other motivator at play here?
Yeah, I mean, this is a discussion you could have about Overton windows and how do you reflect the society, how does society decline or progress, depending on how you view it over time. And, yeah, I mean, it's like one of those things where, like, the really tough problems in life are so big you can't really get... You simultaneously have a hard time getting your hands around it, and also, if you do, getting society to be, like, on board with this, like, okay, I've gotten an individual because of whatever complex... He's like, they've sitting there and done the research, and they've got the solution. Now you've got to get everyone else on board. But when you say, here's the solution to the drug problem, is actually to relax and not be... And the average person says... Fuck you, my cousin's on heroin and it's the worst thing. And like, it's like, it's impossible to, the actual solution.
It's like having hypertension, right?
Right.
Like, the solution is just fucking relax.
Right.
That's easy to say if you're the doctor.
I've got stage 2 hypertension. I'm under a lot of stress. Right. I could be done. Yeah.
Right, motherfucker. I got things to worry about.
Yeah. It's the devil. It's the devil, to try to figure out. But, I don't know. The other thing that's exciting about this is that HBO released some numbers, and across all platforms, so that's HBO Go, that's live airing, that's on demand.
HBO Now.
That the pilot episode received 2.2 million people watching it.
Not bad.
Which is more than most Simon efforts get. And also, I noticed there was a lot of contemporary buzz amongst critics and fans alike. I'm hoping that maybe that this will, like, make some noise in the Emmys.
This has got to be the one, right?
Not that I give a shit about the Emmys, but it does. It's one of those things that move the needle, and the more people that see this. I mean, that's, like, verging on 1% of the U.S. adult population saw The Deuce.
Okay.
That's a pretty good start. If, like, 1 out of 100 people walk away with this and be like, Jesus Christ, can we do something different? Like, shit, this was going on in the 70s, and the problems we're still struggling with.
And I'm talking about David Simon getting a little bit of recognition, too.
Yeah.
Because it's a damn shame he didn't get anything for The Wire.
Right.
I feel like even if just to retroactively fix your mistake,
I do feel like there's a little bit of that,
too. You need to give the dude something.
I feel like there's a little bit of that, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was incredible, and it taught me a lot of new things. It's also very entertaining. Like, it's very...
Yeah.
I think watchable is the right word. Like, at moment to moment, there's always something fascinating happening, and you're learning something new or to something like, and the, I was talking to the Jason Shankle, and I guess he's like really steeped in 70s culture because of movies and stuff. And I was saying, like, I thought the verisimilitude was that, or the period ishness of it looked like, and as far as the police officers' uniforms, the police cars, the contemporary cars, the way people dressing, the way the actual New York City was, the way they shot it looked very something from the 70s, and he was like, it was kind of like passable. So maybe if you got, like, maybe if you grew up in that era, or you're steeped in a lot of 70s filmmaking, contemporary 70s filmmaking, it'll stand out. But, like, because I get there's only so much you can do to New York City when you're shooting on New York City,
right?
To, like, how, like, it's like one of those things where, like, you know, for this amount of money you can get 90% there, and then the next 10% is going to be a bitch.
Yeah,
you know, and I feel like they went to the 85-90% most of the time. So, like, if you know, the subway signs don't look legit, like, what are you going to do, take down the subway signs? Or, I mean, if you had unlimited money, maybe you would, but
you paste over them, but I don't know, printed sheets CG, of paper CG. Or CG, yeah. Just put a green screen over them and call it a day.
No, but I think it's, like I said, it's amazing looking. It's great writing, great dialogue. It's funny. There's, like, it's really funny in places, too.
It is, yeah.
And it teaches you new things. Like I said, I don't care. Like, I'm not trying to tell you to feel good about selling sex. All right? I don't think this show is trying to make you feel good about it. It's more like, consider that versus the alternative.
Well, it wants you to think about why you are against it.
Yeah, and like and put your perfect world that would happen if everything was enforced exactly to what you against the actual reality that we live in, and which is better and more likely to happen, I guess. Because you don't have to agree with things to, like, not make a worse solution.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I might be really bummed out about driverless cars, I'm not going to go and kill every engineer at Google.
Sure.
That would maybe solve the problem for a
decade or two. A lot of them aren't working on driverless cars, so it'd be a real dick move.
But you know what? The only way to stave off the robotic car driving future that's going to rob so many millions of their jobs is to kill every last motherfucker. Like, I feel like that's exactly the approach we're talking about when we're talking about Vice. And also the fact that, like, no one you know does it. But everyone you know does it.
Yeah.
You know? It's like one of those things. It's all in the shadows. So, you know, you don't know that your wife and your neighbor are fucking getting high every night or, you know, your boss is seeing a whore a week. And
yeah, what's the storyline with the new, like, woman who comes into the studio and wants to film the movie? She's just like a housewife from nowhere.
Oh, right. Her husband and her ran an adult bookstore.
Right.
And she's like, well, hell, I got a nice body.
Now she wants to be
in
movies.
And I got a cute face, and now she's in the movies. Yeah. It's pretty funny.
I just want to say, like, I don't quite understand where Abby is going to intersect with the porn story yet.
I think she's going to get into it.
I think she will. It's something we kind of talked about a couple episodes in, but it still hasn't even really hinted as to how it's going to get there. It's still all about her parents and her relationship with Vince.
Right.
And the struggle to kind of survive in New York.
Right.
Just a nobody with no money.
I just feel like that she's already, like, adventurous.
Sure.
And she's already doing something that she turned her nose up at the beginning of the series, which is Tin Bar. So, like,
yeah.
And she's also very...
I don't just want to see a downslide for this girl, though, because...
Well, I don't know. It might not be a downslide. It might be, like, look at what... Because, like, right now, if you look at women in porn, there's a lot of them that are messes.
Sure.
And they go in and out and revolve. But every once in a while, you'll hear a woman who, like, does it smart. Like, I'm thinking of, like a Stoya or a Riley Reed, that seems like they're, like, making bank and they're going to, like, do this for a set amount of time and use this to, like, change their lives for the better. And I wonder if Abby's going to be like, you always hear about the stories of people that shoot up and spit out by the industry, but there's also, again, not to put too fine a point in it, sex work is the only job I can think of where women get paid more than men. And not even by a little. It's like a guy might get $500 for busting a nut on camera. The woman's getting $3,000 a scene.
Sure.
Like, it's like turns everything in real life on its head, and that could be very good for women.
Here's the thing, though. I think we already have that character in Maggie Gyllenhaal in Candy. And I don't know but seeing the next generation of that is really interesting to me.
I guess the difference between her and Abby is that
she got into it out of desperation.
There you go.
Certainly.
But Abby is a smart businesswoman looking at, like, the world and making a conscious choice to do something, whereas Candy was forced into it. So I think that's the subtle difference between those two characters.
Could be. They just haven't gone there yet, a season in. I'm kind of surprised by that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like it does feel like it's another classic slow burn where they're going to tell the story at its pace and you're going to be entertained by it or not, and they're not going to be...
So far, so good.
Because it takes them a long time to deal every card onto the table and explain, like, the individual ridiculousness or permanence of these systems. So then they can, once they get all their cards out, they can start shuffling and doing, and then things can move. That's the other thing about The Wire, like, you know, where is this going for? And then, like, shocking things happen. Like, it is in real. That's why it feels so fucking real.
Have you heard anything about the format of this show? Because I know that, you know, in The Wire, we kind of switched to a different perspective for the bulk of the seasons, right? You think there's going to be any of that, or is it going to be just kind of a continuous story this time? I really can't see it moving away from what we've got so far because they leave it up in the air.
Like, it'd be so weird if they could go out to California and look at, like, the boogie night, boogie night aspect of it.
I think you could do that, but I feel like you need to do it through the lens of one of the characters.
It wouldn't be called
we
the Deuce
know.
Anymore because it's like that's it's got to be like The Wire would be weird if you got out of Baltimore. Like, I feel like it's going to be stuck in New York. So,
but we've already got all of the angles, right?
Yeah,
the only thing we don't have is a school teacher, like,
right, or politicians. Like, there's the politicians strangely absent. But you're right. You got journalists. You got cops. You got the
organized
sex
crime,
workers.
You got
civilians,
bartenders.
You got
students.
There's still, like, you know, we talked about the sex work angle, but, like, well, you mentioned with Maggie and her brother.
Yeah.
Like how these things, like relaxing your views on vice also cracks open the door for these other people who get thrown in that just, you know, for no good reason. Mm-hmm. They're like, it's illegal to be a gay man at this time in American history. Like right. sodomy laws are on the books and they have teeth and shit. Mm-hmm. And, but like some of this stuff that you open up in this vice like opens up a door to these other things starting to blossom and mm-hmm. her, you know, telling her brothers like, you know, you don't have to live like this anymore.
Yeah.
It's interesting how many stories they can serve like that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see. I'm on board for season two. So real quick before we move on, I wanted to take a second to talk about our sponsor for this episode, who is HelloFresh. If you are unfamiliar with HelloFresh, you should know that they are a meal delivery service that makes it super easy and super convenient to cook your own meals at home. I don't know if you're aware of this, Aaron, but I have been the world's busiest man. I've taken the title from Elon Musk this week, only for 1 week. I only get it for that. But I've been the world's busiest man last week, and I have to say that HelloFresh has been a lifesaver for me because I do not have time to shop. I'm buying a house, packing all my shit, we're covering 4 shows at a time. Do not have time to shop, and HelloFresh has been there for me. And with the holidays coming up, it's never been more important for me to have HelloFresh because that means I don't have to go to the grocery store.
I'm sure people can identify with how busy people are during the holidays.
Absolutely.
It's the best time, but also could be the busiest time.
Yeah, and there are a couple of benefits for signing up for HelloFresh. You know, you don't have to go to the grocery store and spend that time. But B, all the time you don't spend, you get to spend with your family and friends during Thanksgiving and the holiday season. So I think that's a big benefit. Right now, HelloFresh is offering $30 off your first week of deliveries if you go to HelloFresh.com and you use the promo code BALDMOVE30 when you sign up. I suggest you do it because each week it comes with up to 4 meals per week, and that can be for you, that can be for your family, your whole family. I mean, I don't know if you're like the Duggars or somebody, maybe they don't have a plan for you, but chances are you're not, so they've got a plan that can cover you. Right now they're doing a lot of holiday-style recipes, so they have a couple called Meatloaf a la Mom with roasted root vegetables and thyme gravy. They have pan-seared scallops. Scallops are pretty fancy. I don't often cook. If I were given the choice to like go to the store and pick something up, scallops not first on my list. I want something
I'll confess, I've never brought home scallop. I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Right.
I mean, that's some of the cool things. What I like about this service is that it gives you ideas because I get stuck in a rut. Like I like cooking. Right. I like shopping. I don't identify with a lot of stuff that Jim identifies with, but I do get stuck in ruts where I just make the same thing over and over and over again. And like, you know, why don't I make scallops? Because I don't know. I go, give me a pound of scallop. And the guy goes, I don't know if they're good scallops or not.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and
you know,
I don't know what to do with them even if I get them.
Right, right. So these are like, you know, they're already pre-measured and it's fresh and it's high quality.
Now I would know what
I'm looking for in a scallop.
And what to do with it, because it does come with recipe cards for every single one with 6 easy steps that you can follow. You don't need anything other than like salt and pepper and olive oil to complete these recipes and a pan to cook it in. So, yeah, I suggest you go and sign up for HelloFresh. If you want to save $30 off your first week of deliveries, go to HelloFresh.com and use promo code BALDMOVE30.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to talk about, and I don't even know because like I was worried that we wouldn't get a lot out of the deuce.
Yeah, talk for like
from
an hour.
Our previous conversations, but Lady Dynamite season 2 came out this weekend.
Hmm.
And if you don't know, it's a story. It's Maria Bamford, who's known for this like really weird, unconventional stand up that talks a lot about mental health issues and talks about her own struggling with, I think it's bipolarism. And season 2 is amazing because it's ostensibly about the making of season 1.
Oh, boy.
And how she had this clear idea of, like, I want to tell something that's earnest and funny and hopeful about what it's like to live with a mental illness. And everyone saying, oh, that's not markable. You got to sex it up or you got to turn it to science fiction or fantasy. And, like, this... Like she didn't take that with the, and she's telling, I've only seen the first four episodes, but she's telling this really complex story format that, like, in the beginning of the show, at the beginning of every episode, it's like the past, or no, it's always the present, and it's like what's going on right now. And then it'll say that it'll show this cue card that's the future, and you know it's the future because in the future Netflix got bought out by Elon Musk. It's called Musk Vision.
Okay.
And the screen turns red, and it has, like, in the Netflix front, Musk Vision. And it's the future of what she's afraid is going to happen. And then it goes back to the past, where it has her interactions with her parents. And what's interesting is, like, all these people are played by the same actors. Like, when Maria is, like, an 11-year-old girl, she's in pigtails and, like, coveralls, but she's still played by Maria.
Right.
And her older sister is still the 40-something-year-old woman that's also – and her mom, like, no one gets – it's all the same characters. But it's funny to show, like, she shows how – this is the part that rings true with me because I don't think I have a mental illness. I've certainly had my share of panic attacks and some shit to work out from my upbringing. But I don't think, knock on this wood table, that I have a diagnosable mental illness.
Okay.
People that have listened to the show for years might disagree. What hooks me into it, other than the fact that, like, I – you know, like – the fact that Maria has a panic attack and I can identify with that, is her version of growing up in the suburbs with her mom and dad is so fucking cutting and biting. And how, like, when she has her a relationship with her current boyfriend, her realization is she has no idea how to fight with a person.
Okay.
Like, to have a productive, like, argument where you're having a strong and she's viewing it through the lens of, like, she like does this action and it goes back to the past so she can see her parents, and, like, they got this idea of, like, they can't have any cross words, so they never fight, but they just loathe each other. And I'm doing a bad job of selling this, but, like, if you are a child of the 70s or 80s and your parents are one of those that stayed together because of the kids, I feel like there's a lot to identify in there. They're trying to be good parents. There's not abuse. There's not any kind of, like, crazy ass peekaboo situation from Breaking Bad. But it's like the quiet desperation kind of thing.
Right.
That, and it's just as toxic and can fuck you up in ways that are less obvious and also less likely to, like, if you sit there and, like, well, the reason I'm this terrible person is because I had these two suburban parents and they just refused to get divorced and they provide me this stable existence.
It's hard to make that conclusion.
It's hard to say, like, oh, those are fucking monsters, you know, but, like, the effects are still real. Sure. And it's also, like the first two episodes, me and Cecily's jaw dropped about three or four times, and we belly laughed about three or four times. It is both cutting and insightful and fucking hilarious.
Well, I think maybe once you guys get through season two, you should come back and do another Bald Move TV on.
Yeah, I think that everyone, because they're stereotypical 30-minute comedy episodes. I would like anyone listening to this podcast to fire up Netflix and watch the first two episodes of the first season. And if you don't like it, fine. But I have a feeling you'll be like me and you'll get to the Fat Dean Cain era of season one and be hooked and it'll be all over.
Sounds awesome.
Because yes, there's a portly Dean Cain.
Sweet.
Late in season one that shows up.
Check that out.
So, like I said, I don't have, obviously it's a one-sided discussion, but I think when we finish it, Cecily and I will be talking. The other thing I've been trying to get off the ground is I really want to talk about PBS's Vietnam War documentary.
Oh, right.
I'm trying to, like, Jesse Wilson and I, who was from formerly of Personal Arrogance fame, have been trying to get together, I've been putting off. I watched the first four episodes and I didn't want to do the last four because I didn't want to get confused what I was going to be talking about, but, like, that's something on the Bald Move TV horizon. Is there anything
want to get Star Trek Discovery in there as soon as we finish it, which,
yeah,
fuck me, I haven't had any time.
No,
but
I heard that it wrapped up this weekend.
Yeah.
That may or may not be true.
I'm hoping to get through it in the next couple of weeks, and maybe we'll be back at that point with another Bald Move TV.
I talked to some fans down in the Rocket City NerdCon about it. Everyone seems to be pretty pleased.
What I've seen so far has been
pretty
good.
The last Bald Move TV was about that. So, but I'm not sure what else is on my TV watching radar. But we'll see. Anyway, yeah, everyone should watch The Deuce, and I think you should at least try Lady Dynamite to see if you think it's as funny as I do. Mm-hmm. We'll be back the next time we're back.
Yeah.
Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.